let's see if the Brownster is on.
Hello?
Hello, Governor. This is Leander Caney.
An eerie resemblance.
Do I sound just like him?
Oi!
There's two things I love in life. That's tea and tech. Now let's do the show.
Hello and welcome to the Cultcast, the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. My name is Arifin Elijah. I'm your host. I'm here with Buster Hine. Hey, Buster.
Oh, hey, dude.
We've got a deputy chief editor-in-chief of Cultimac, John Brownlee. Is that
Hello,
an official
boys.
Title for you?
It needed some more superlatives.
I thought you'd like that. And this week's episode is brought to you by the fine folks at DigiDNA.net and their excellent product, Discade 5. We're going to talk a little bit more about that later in the show. How you guys doing?
So good.
Oh, that's what I love to hear.
It's been an incredible time.
I'm sure you guys have noticed we are lacking a very British personality, Leander Caney.
A jerk.
So for those of you who have only been listening intermittently to our episodes, Leander's traveling. He's in Europe. And he's there with his family, and his internet has been sparse, and he doesn't always have it. So I think right now he said he's on a bus to jolly old England. Every time I talk to him, I feel like he says he's on a bus somewhere. But Buster, you said you just saw him on Skype, right?
Yeah, he must have been signed on from his phone.
So maybe he's dodging us.
Well, yeah, he's doing the whole bus tour, which, you know, I lived in Europe for 10 years. Like, you need to be a brave man to do that. You don't, like, you don't sign up for 2 months worth of bus tours if you can avoid it.
Is he really doing that?
Well, he's not doing a bus tour, but he's, like, traveling everywhere by bus, which, you know, the good news is that you can do that pretty easily in Europe, but, like, it gets pretty shady pretty quick.
Especially when you're with your wife and four kids.
Yeah. Apparently, Leander had to actually, like, tackle somebody on the London Tube the other day because, like, a cop needed his help. Like, it was very...
What?
Yeah, I know.
He told you that story, didn't he? He's lying.
No, his wife did. She posted it on Facebook.
What? What happened?
Yeah, Tracy did.
I think it was a pickpocket, and the cop, for whatever reason, or the bobby, or what have you, like, needed backup. So Leander, being the man of action,
the ultimate gov, he govved it up like a gov.
Yeah, he cracked his knuckles and was just like, it's go time, you know? Just smashed his way into that thing, so... You know, and I guess now he's running for mayor of London. So
wow! So he may never come back.
No,
hopefully not.
Well, let's hope they have Wi-Fi in the mayor's castle. I'm assuming it's a castle. He's in Europe. Well, let's move on, Buster. Actually, you know what? Before we move on, Buster, you were recently on a trip in San Francisco, and on your way back, we were texting back and forth, and you're like, "Yeah, I'm kind of thinking about going to Steve Jobs' house." And I was, of course, like, you should do it because I would totally do it. And you went.
Yeah,
I know
went
you don't.
You.
I know you don't think this is very interesting, but how was it? Like, what did you see? Were there any people there? Like, were there flowers everywhere? Like, what was it like? did you cry on your knees?
An hour
and
a half
hands?
To kill.
What's that?
So, or we just had about an hour and a half to kill, so we didn't have much time. But we went by there. We walked around his neighborhood. It's a really, like, pretty neighborhood. His house was under construction, though, so it didn't seem like anybody was there. But
oh, you mean like it's totally empty, like they're remodeling the whole thing or something?
Yeah, I'll have to send you pictures. There's basically there's a fence around it, and there's plywood all around the sides of it, so you can't really see the house too well. But if I'm right, I think that in the Walter Isaacson book, they said that the Jobs bought the house behind them as well. And it looked like there were people in the backyard, like kids playing in the backyard. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I mean, it wasn't, you know, crazy remarkable. No flowers or anything like that.
Wow. So I guess I just would have expected there to be some type of memorial, like, flower pile there, but nothing at all, right? It's just totally normal?
Well, it's been, like, you know, almost 9 months now, so...
Yeah, but... I kind of expected that to always be there. That's like Jim Morrison's grave. It's like every time you go there, there's just going to be stuff and really bad artwork of him.
Well, it's not his grave, so, you know, people live in the house, so I'm sure you don't want a memorial greeting you every time you leave or come home, you know?
That's probably a good point. So,
closure eventually.
All in all, it's under construction, nothing really to see there.
Yeah.
Someday, as all true Apple fans must, I think I need to go on a Mecca to his house, and I plan on just sitting on my knees with my palms facing the sky and crying. Oh, God. With my arms outstretched. But that's a conversation for another day. I'm going to post that on Instagram when I do it, though. Hey, let's talk about Google. Lots of Google news this week, and you guys are much more versed in it. John, why don't you tell us a little bit about Google I.O. and what they're announcing and why we should care?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure we should care.
Oh, but, well, then let's move on.
Well, I mean, you know, it's industry stuff, so yeah, I mean, it's important.
I am interested to hear it, too, so.
Yeah, this week, Google has their I.O. conference, and, you know, Apple kind of does, like, 90 minutes of keynotes, but Google kind of historically does, like, you know, 100 hours of keynotes in 3 days or something. But they've, you know, the big ones for Apple fans are... Google finally is releasing their own tablet. It's called the Nexus 7, so it's following sort of the Nexus nomenclature that they've been using across their smartphones to show like this is our idea of what an ideal Android device is like. The Nexus 7 is it's aimed right at the Amazon Kindle Fire. It costs $200. It's got a Tegra 3 processor. It's actually like surprisingly powerful and beefy. Google's actually selling it at a loss.
Wow. Yeah, $200. That's dirt cheap.
Yeah, it's. It's a really nice machine, but it really just does go to show that no one can compete with the iPad. Like, you know, for them to compete with the iPad, they need to basically be paying to put it in people's hands instead of getting people to pay them to
actually want to use it. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, and so they released that. They released. They released something, what was it called? It was called the Nexus Q, yeah. And it's basically an Apple TV competitor with a built-in 25-watt amp. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that, you know, that'll be your media hub. You control it with your smartphone or your tablet. It's, you know, you play stuff from the Google Play Store. It's aimed right at, it's seemingly an Apple TV competitor. Like, it's a black circle. The Apple TV is a black little puck. Like, but except it's, and it's made in America, which is wow. really admirable.
Yeah.
It costs $300.
Only yeah. 200 more than the Apple TV.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So they did that, which is just bizarre, and there's no way to control it unless you have an Android phone or a tablet.
It's bizarro.
Yeah, like it's I don't really understand it. It's aimed at absolutely nobody. And then they released the new version of Android, which is Jelly Bean, that has the requisite Siri clone in it.
Okay, we got John back. Sorry about that. And John, you were talking about Jelly Bean. Do you remember your train of thought there?
Oh, yeah. I was just saying that, Jelly Bean's been announced. It's not a 5.0 upgrade, which is what a lot of people were expecting. Mm-hmm. Because like a year after Ice Cream Sandwich was debuted, it's only got like 1% of the like all 1% of all devices have Ice Cream Sandwich, so they're just calling it a 0.1 upgrade, and then, you know, it's got the usual like Siri requisite clone and all of that stuff. And I think the thing that's really exciting for iPhone and iPad owners and Apple fans is that Chrome is finally coming to iOS. I think that's the big one.
And we actually got that announcement today, right? And is it in the store right now?
yeah.
Because I've had some people on Twitter tell me it's not there, it's there, it's not there. So I thought that maybe they pulled it.
I think it's not for all international stores yet.
Ah, that would explain it, because we have a lot of international listeners. So, but it's in the U.S. store.
Yeah, it is. I'm actually using it right now.
Well, this is great. I mean, so tell me about Chrome, because I really like Chrome on my Mac a lot. It's super fast. It's great. It has a lot of features that Safari doesn't. And if you could, John, tell us why you'd want to use Chrome more than Safari on your iOS device. Because, I mean, remember Yahoo released that Access browser that got a ton of hype. And within a week, no one was using it or talking about it. Is this going to be another one of those instances?
I don't think so. I mean, we'll see. You know, the problem with Chrome on the iOS side is that it's not deeply integrated in the same way that Safari is. And that's kind of like a burden for any third-party browser. They're basically competing with the fact that, like, Apple is artificially keeping browsers from realizing their full potential on the App Store. But it's, I mean, you know, in regards to Chrome, I mean, Chrome is the biggest browser on the Mac and PC these days. You know, it's got more market share than Internet Explorer. It's got way more than Safari. It's got more than Firefox. And, you know, and one of the things that Chrome does really well is it integrates across multiple browsers. So if you log into Chrome on one laptop and you can, you know, open up your tabs or see your history on your desktop or, you know, and now you can do that on your iPad or your iPhone, which is fantastic.
Oh, that is a cool feature. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, it's basically like if you use Chrome on your Mac, you are probably going to want to use Chrome on your iPhone or iPad. And chances are more people are using Chrome on their Mac than our Safari.
Yeah.
Interesting. Buster, have you had a chance to use it?
Yeah. No, it's really nice. Like, it's a great web browser. Like John said, the only problem is that you can't, it's not that you can't set it as the default browser. But there are some jailbreak hacks that'll probably be updated pretty soon that will allow you to do that.
Can you guys think of any other, I know you have really haven't had much chance to play with it, but can you guys think of any other, features that it has that you think are really cool?
Well, I think that, some of the features, I mean, it's much cleaner. Like, I think that, Safari, iOS 6 is sort of eliminating some of this, but, you know, Apple doesn't really, I think Apple has an idea of browsing that is sort of a couple of years behind what Google is doing with Chrome in regards to like what is superfluous, what isn't, you know, having a clean browsing experience. You know, if you look at Safari on the iPad, it looks pretty much identical to Safari on the Mac, which is sort of odd because, you know, Apple's done all of this work to re-envision traditional desktop interfaces for touch, and yet they haven't really bothered to do that for Safari. And I think that Chrome, to me, feels a lot more like a browser that is more modern with touchscreen devices in mind. And, I mean, you know, I think that that's a really great selling point. But, you know, unfortunately, like, there are some things that are kind of, you know, behind the times on Chrome. Well, not behind the times, but Chrome, for example, has to use kind of an inferior version of Apple's WebKit standard in iOS that makes it slower than Safari. And it's not Chrome's fault. It's
Apple's.
Yeah. It's what Apple does to GIMP any competing browsers from coming on the platform. And I think the one thing that does really bother me about Chrome is one of the best things about Chrome is Google realized that in the minds of 99% of people, there is no distinction between a URL or a site name and searching for a term. So, like, you know, we all know this. Like, when we go see our grandmothers doing a Google search, like, they'll load up Google and then they'll type in, you know, CNN, and then they'll click the link to CNN.com. They don't actually just enter CNN.com. And I think that, you know, one of the great things that Google Chrome did was not only unite the browser and the search bar, and make the, you know, that location bar work for everything. But they also did all of this great stuff where you could specify search engines. So, for example, if I'm trying to find something in Cult of Mac's archives on Chrome, all I need to enter is I've set up a shortcut, and all I need to enter is COM and then Steve Jobs, and then all of the search results from Cult of Mac that are about Steve Jobs will just pop up. And there's no functionality like that on Chrome for iOS. Like, you can't actually specify search terms. It doesn't have that sort of flexibility, which I think is really disappointing because that's kind of how Chrome made a name for itself to begin with.
Interesting. Let's talk about the Facebook app as long as we're on the topic of apps. John, I know you recently put out a piece on Cult2Mac talking about how Facebook, the app, is going to be updated somewhat sometime soon, right? Because I'm sure you guys agree, the Facebook app is a turd. It is so slow. I mean, I read an article by you, John. It might have been 2 or 3 months ago about why you should be using Safari and to use Facebook. And it had never really occurred to me how bad the Facebook app was until I read that, because I always just assumed that it was faster than Safari. And then I started using it in Safari. Oh, my gosh, it's so much faster. Why is the Facebook app so slow now, and how are they going to fix it to make it better? Because right now, I think it's almost unusable.
Well, I would agree. I mean, it's a terrible app.
It really is bad, and it used to be good.
Yeah, I think there's thousands of one-star reviews for it in the App Store, like thousands. And it's, you know, it's like a top 50 app. Like, can you think of any other top 50 app which has thousands of one-star reviews?
Right, yeah.
Well, it's because it's like a necessity. You know, everybody wants to be checking Facebook from their mobile phone and have a dedicated app for it. But it's such a crappy experience, you don't want to do it anymore.
Oh, man, you're right, it's such a turd. I think the reason is, the technical reasons are kind of convoluted why it's so bad. I mean, basically what it has to do with, though, is that, when Facebook is like shooting you your Facebook data through the app, they're shooting it in a format that is very iOS unfriendly. And the reason they do that is to maintain a lot of backwards compatibility on their end. Like, so Facebook's got their fingers in a lot of pies, not just iOS. It's not like Instagram where they only have to worry about sending data to iPhones and Android devices now. Like, Facebook needs to, you know, if you post a status update on Facebook, Facebook needs to be able to take that status update and equally send it in a compatible format, not only to an iPhone, but to, like, somebody in Africa is like dumb phone over text message. Like, wow. You know, they've got so many things they've got to do with that.
Not that
so
your phones in Africa are dumb. I'm sure they're very intelligent.
So what like Facebook's tried to do historically has been to make, you know, to basically do everything in HTML, which is easy to parse. But for the iPhone, for many of the reasons why Chrome is slower than Safari on the iPhone, like, you know, Facebook will send it in HTML5 and then have the app kind of translate that and push it into the app, but it's a much slower experience. And, you know, Facebook uses Apple's in-app browser, and one of the limitations of that in-app browser, as I understand it, is that it's got very bad caching issues. So if you are going to refresh a web page, for example, it just kind of needs to refresh the whole thing. It can't just like pick what's new. And
like
so
on your, like on Safari, right? Where it just refreshes parts of itself.
Right, exactly. So what happens with the Facebook app, because it's using an the in-app browser, is every time your Facebook news feed updates itself, which of course happens like dozens of times per minute or whatever, it has to reload the whole thing before you can see it. Which just takes forever. You know, so it's not bringing in new status updates individually. So what Facebook's doing now is they've basically said, okay, well, we need to, you know, bite the bullet and make things harder for our engineers and better for our users
and
on iOS.
Actually release a good app.
Yeah, exactly. And do this wholly very differently. So it's supposed to look the same, but it's going to be a complete overhaul from the ground up when it comes.
Do you have any idea on when we can expect to see it? Any dates?
They said this summer. You know.
Sometime this summer? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Hey, John, let me ask you really fast. Are you wearing your earphones?
Yes, I am.
I think your microphone keeps hitting your shirt and it keeps
running. Yeah. No, it's no problem. I will fix that.
Yeah, because we keep hearing it. And actually, I was wondering if it was like a digital issue, but it just occurred to me you're probably wearing your headphones.
I am, and I'm sorry about that. I'll make sure it doesn't happen.
Okay. It sounds a lot better now, though.
Thanks. Actually, it was rubbing up against my junk. I don't know.
What?
It's a really long mic cord.
I was imagining it just rubbing your nipple gracefully up and down. Okay, well, good. Now that noise is, now that that terribly wonderful noise is gone, let's continue. So sometime this summer, we're expecting a new Facebook app. That'll be great because I really don't like using Safari on my iPhone, to access Facebook anyway. I really do like using the Facebook app. And like I said, it used to be so good. It was a great app. And then they released this new app and it's just been a, it's been such a piece of poop that finally I was like, I just can't stand this anymore. When it takes, you know, it takes 30 seconds to load the timeline. And you know, in this day and age, who has 30 seconds to do anything? There is nothing I do that takes longer than 20 seconds. Nothing. Well, insert your own joke here.
I've heard from some girls that that's true. So,
well, I'm not going to argue with that. Hey, I want to talk about Apple's big app this week that they released, their new podcast app, which if you follow me on Twitter, I've been talking about it. And Buster, I know you've been talking about it too because you really liked it. But before we talk about that app, I want to talk to you about our sponsors app. We're sponsored this week by the guys at DigiDNA. I believe they're Australian, and I've actually been talking with them. And one of the things I love about them is they're actually fans of the show. They listen, and we email back and forth about stuff, and they give us suggestions on how to make it better and that kind of thing. So I really like the guys. And they make this really cool app called Discade 5. And Discade 5 does a ton of stuff. They call it the iPhone, iPad, and iPod transfer tool for PC and Mac. And basically what it allows you to do is move stuff from your iPhone or iPad back and forth from your computers, either PC or Mac. And I've used this app to actually kind of help myself get out of some legal troubles. And let me tell you guys a little story. I had a bank that I was using that contacted me and told me that I was on the hook for this huge amount of credit card debt. And I was really puzzled because I don't have any credit card debt. And I figured out that they had somehow attached my name to another person's account. And I was totally baffled. And I ended up going back and forth with the bank for weeks. And finally, they cleared my name and they left me a voicemail. And they're like, oh, hey, we just want to let you know everything's fine, you know, and you don't have to worry. And we've cleared up this whole matter. Well, they had told me that kind of thing in the past, and it ended up not being true. What I was able to do was plug my iPhone into my Mac and access all the voicemails that were on my iPhone, pulled all the relevant ones down, and now I have those as proof that this matter has been cleared up. And you can do all sorts of cool stuff like that with Discade 5. You can access your call logs, you can access your messages, you can pull music down, you can pull videos down. So let's say your computer gets stolen and you don't have your music anymore, you can actually use Discade 5 to pull all of the content down off your iPhone or iPod and put it back on your computer. So it lets you access all the things on your iPhone or iOS device that you can't do in iTunes. Check it out. Go to digidna.net. That's digidna.net. I had a problem saying this last show. And check out Discade 5. There's a lot of its functionality is actually free. And some of its more advanced functions do cost some money, but you can use it for free. And if you like it, then you can buy it. And I want to thank the guys at DigiDNA for sponsoring the show. We love them Australians. I love them.
Well, Jeffrey Rush is an Australian, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
he's like an ambassador to the Australian people, as far as I understand. So how bad could they be if Jeffrey Rush is their ambassador? Let's move on. I want to talk about the podcast app. John, have you gotten a chance to play with it?
Yeah, it's great.
So you do like it?
Well, I mean, yeah. So I like it infinitely better than what they were doing before.
Okay, I think I know where you're going with this. Let me just talk a little bit about what it is first. So as you know, or as you may not know, actually, podcasts was a part of iTunes. So if you wanted to access podcasts in iTunes, you had to boot up iTunes and go to the podcast section and then like search for stuff was really broken. And the whole experience was not very good. So people were speculating that Apple was going to release this podcast app. And they did. And it's for iPad and iPhone. And it's just like the iTunes U app or the Facebook Messenger app in that it's meant for one purpose. It's just for podcasts. and it breaks out that functionality into a really great experience as far as I'm concerned. I mean, the search is really good. The way it's laid out, I think, is very good. It's not perfect. There are some bugs with it. Have you guys noticed that pressing the subscribe button to some of the podcasts doesn't actually subscribe you to the podcasts?
Yeah, and the search is really wonky as well.
And like some of the thumbnails actually aren't showing up for the podcast, which kind of sucks.
Yeah.
What do you, Buster, you've been playing around with it. What do you think about the new design?
I like it. I like it better than, like what John said, I like it a lot better than what they had with the old podcast inside of iTunes.
Yeah.
So I think it's a better way for people who are like really into podcasts. Also, it's kind of interesting whether or not you're going to be able to, or whether or not they're trying to push podcasts towards like a subscription model, because there's some redeem links and everything like that we've seen.
Interesting.
That kind of hint at that. Mm-hmm. So it could be interesting to see what they're doing, as well as there's a top stations for better, you know, information on what are good podcasts out there and everything.
Hmm. John, what do you think?
I like it a lot. I mean, it feels great. It's a lot of fun to use, which, you know, Apple has really, you know, I mean, it's a very whimsical app in its own way. Like it's an app you really want to touch and play with. And I mean, God, I mean, Apple has done podcasts terribly for years. So I mean, it's great that the iOS has such a great app. And I think that it's, you know, it's going to prove to be a very important app in the long run, because I think that I think what we're seeing with podcasts is the beginning of Apple's strategy for finally making iTunes not suck, which is by breaking out all of this stuff into iOS apps, like all of this, you know, marginal stuff that, you know, maybe not everybody uses but is important. And instead of having this like one all-encompassing mega app to control all of it, you know, instead it's going to be just iOS apps that you deal with. So I think it's, you know, I really like it. I really like it. I mean, it's just not, for me, it's just not as good as Instacast, you know, but I still really like it.
I've heard that it's not as good as Instacast. I've heard that it's not as good as Downcast. And I after using it, I think that's true. I mean, those apps have been fully fleshed out experiences for quite a while. It's definitely better than what they had. If I could gush for a moment, I honestly really love it. I mean, I think it's really well laid out. It seems intuitive to me. I love that kind of vintage, like reel-to-reel recording mechanism they've added to it, you know? I learned a new word this week, skeuomorphism.
Did you learn it?
I didn't. Well, I didn't say I could say it, but I could say it in my brain. And basically what that means is designing based upon technologies that maybe had, you know, some type of functionality or look to them that served a purpose at the time but no longer do. Like, you know, Apple's iCal, that ugly leather beast that they put in iOS or in OS X that has like the pages ripped out and stuff. Like that stuff never made sense to me and I didn't like it. But the reel-to-reel thing they added in the podcast app, I really love, and it made a lot of sense to me.
So why do you like that but not the Cal app? Like why do you have problems with that form of skeuomorphism but not the other?
I think because I never used a freaking desk calendar.
Okay. Me. So and have you used like one of those reel-to-reel things?
Actually, though? I have.
Okay.
But I can't say that I've used it to any like I haven't used one a lot, but we used to have one in my house when I was a kid and I would use it from time to time. But I think it's just a you know, whimsical thing. I just like it. You know, I think it's cool and it reminds me of vintage music equipment, and I'm really into music, so I like that aspect of it. Does it need to be there? No. It really does not need to be there, and I don't think it serves any function other than looking cool.
Well, I don't know about that. Like, I mean, you know, I mean, I think the difference between, I mean, I think the podcast app's skeuomorphism is done really well. You know, there's a lot of comparison to the iCal, but when you look at iCal, what you have is like the limit of the skeuomorphism there is basically them slapping a really crappy leather texture on the back of everything. Like, you know, right. It's not, it, you know, it's not, an app that has been designed from the ground up to be a metaphor for using a calendar. You know, and this is something where I think that, you know, a lot of people still don't get podcasts. Like, it's easy for us to say that we, you know, I mean, the reason we use skeuomorphism in design, right, is to help people who don't understand technology edge into it by making a visual metaphor to something that they already understand, right? So the desktop, the computer desktop, we forget, but that's a skeuomorphic design. Like, that is supposed to be symbolic of a real desktop that you're looking down upon. And, like, it's become abstracted over time, but that's, you know, Windows and Mac before it, that's how millions of people came to understand computing, is because of that visual metaphor. Whereas with podcasting, I think that, you know, what Apple's doing with the podcast app is they're trying to, you know, both by separating it out of kind of buried function in iTunes and by giving it this design, I think they're really trying to make podcasting accessible to people who previously didn't understand it. They're saying, like, hey, this is basically radio for your iPhone or for your iPod. Like, this is, you know, and see, it works just like this vintage cassette recorder and like a radio. It's all, you know, and they're basically trying to, I think they're going to double down on podcasts. I do believe that they're going to start introducing a charging and a paid revenue model on podcasts. And I think that they really want to give it a push because they want more people using it. And I think that that's what's behind this redesign and behind the skeuomorphism, is like, they really want to finally have people not looking at podcasting as a niche, but actually understanding it and being like, oh, I get this now.
I think that's a good point. And I think it does make it much more approachable to everyone. I mean, the app makes finding new content so much easier than it ever was. And one of the things I love about it, of course, is iTunes on your Mac used to be the hub of podcasts. So unless you were using Downcast or Instacast, you would download the podcasts on your iTunes on your Mac. And then in order to get them on your iPod or your iPad or whatever, you had to sync them. And then every time the episodes were updated, you had to resync to get those episodes, which was a hassle. I mean, no one ever did it, because who plugs their iPhone into their Mac anymore? I mean, I don't know very many people that like to do that or remember to do it. So you end up, you know, downloading an app for every podcast you want to listen to, you know? So I would use the NPR app to listen to NPR podcasts and so on. And now you have this app that will go out and it pull down the list of all the newest episodes, and it will even automatically download them for you if you'd like. And I think one of my favorite parts is discovery is so easy now. I mean, you can find all these different shows, audio and video out there that are mostly free. And you don't even have to store them on your iDevice. You can just stream them, which is great, because a lot of times what I would have to do is, you know, like, let's say you wanted to watch the like an Apple keynote, right? So you'd have to download them into iTunes on your Mac and then sync them up to your device, which takes up space on your device. So my iPad was almost full with Steve Jobs videos because I like to watch Steve Jobs videos. And I deleted all of those, but they're still there on my iPad and I can stream them, which is really nice. And I spent almost all day yesterday just streaming different content that I never would have listened to before. And let me tell you, the Susie Orman show, it's pretty good. Have you guys ever listened to it?
I don't even know who that is.
You don't know who Susie Orman is? She's like the financial world's Oprah.
Oh, well, that
explains why you don't know who she is. Anyway, check out the podcast app. It's free. I think it's the top downloaded app in iTunes for both the iPad and the iPhone right now. It's been getting a lot of press. And in the 28 or 24 plus hours that it's been out, it already has like 1,900 reviews. And I think it has a 4-star rating so far. Like I said, it's not perfect. It's a first attempt. And, you know, I've been reading some of the reviews in iTunes and people get so pissed. They're like, ew, it doesn't work perfectly. How could Apple ever release this? And they get so upset. It's not a bad app. I mean, it's really good and it's a great first attempt. I mean, there are going to be some issues with it, but, you know, it's free. You know, I think Downcast costs $2 and it's a fantastic app, but it's $2. And if you don't want to spend $2, this is a great alternative for you.
And I'm glad that Apple hasn't like made these other podcasting apps obsolete with this, because it's a great app, but you're right. Like, I mean, more sophisticated users are still going to need to use like Instacast and Downcast and all of these functionality. And, you know, I mean, this is for everybody. This is an app for everybody. And I think it's a fantastic
app for the rest of us.
Yeah. An app for the rest of us.
I think that's a good point that you were talking about earlier about, Apple breaking out this functionality from iTunes, because iTunes has really been bloated for a long time, hasn't it? I mean, they just keep adding more and more stuff to it. I mean, remember when they released it, it was about music. And now think about all the things that it does. It's turning into this huge piece of bloatware, and they need to start breaking it out into, you know, different experiences. You could download the parts that you need and not the parts that you don't want, so you don't have this giant app. I kind of felt like I was walking around in an iPad commercial yesterday. I'm not joking. I was walking around my living room in my kitchen watching this episode of the Susie Orman Show, which I'm actually kind of embarrassed now that I said that.
Were you asking Siri if it was going to rain?
No, I was not asking Siri if it was going to rain.
Were you cooking gazpacho?
I was cooking gazpacho.
Okay.
And I was like, this is incredible. You know, like here I am. I used to build PCs in my earlier days. And, you know, like you remember CRT monitors? They'd weigh like, you know, 60 pounds. And here I am walking around with this Retina display iPad, watching streaming content on demand, walking around my house, going from room to room, watching this show. I was like, this is crazy. Like, this really is out of a commercial. Like, there's no other piece of technology that I know of that works this flawlessly, especially with all my other devices in my household. It's amazing. And I'll give you guys some of my gazpacho if you're nice to me.
Okay.
Hey, I want to wrap up with one of my favorite segments, and that's our listeners' Twitter questions. I did a call out for Twitter questions, I think, 2 or 3 days ago, and we got a ton. So we're not going to be able to get through all of them. But let's kind of try to run through these. And some of these are actually pretty fun. Our listeners come up with some of the craziest stuff. Some of it makes sense, and some of it makes no sense at all. So I just booted up a bunch of these. Let's just talk a little bit about each one, if you guys will. This one is from Evan Hogg, and that's at EVANHAAG on Twitter. And he says, hey, Airfan, I have a Cultcast topic. Discuss the patent wars between Apple and Samsung and Motorola and how they affect end products. That's going to be kind of a long conversation, I think. But I got another question that was similar that said, do you think that these all these patent wars, you know, are hurting the tech industry or helping it? What do you guys think about that, John? I mean, hurting or helping?
I hate to say it. This is way beyond me, but I think that my feeling on it is that it's neither hurting nor helping. Like, what we're seeing is for years and years and years, all of these companies have been buying up all of these patents, have been patenting anything that goes through their heads. Like, they've
Of it has been really vague, right? Like, super vague patents.
Yeah, and that's not just like Samsung and Motorola. Like, Apple has more vague or unpractical patents that you can shake a stick at. Like, so I think that you know, what you're seeing right now and what you've been seeing for the last couple of years is essentially these guys, these guys trying to figure out in court what these patents are all worth. Like, they don't know. Like, it's imagine buying like a million, you know, imagine having like a million nuclear missiles and not knowing which of those would actually work if you fired. Like, I think that that's what we've got going on here. Hmm. And, you know, I think that it's unfortunate. It takes up a lot of time. It's very wasteful. It's very boring.
It is boring. I agree, man. It really is. All these, like, articles I read about patents, I'm like, oh, snore.
Yeah, we've kind of stopped covering them just because they're so boring for most people. And they're so indecisive, because what happens one day, like, you know, Samsung, like, Apple got an injunction against Samsung's, like, year-old Galaxy tablet that never sold anyway, and that's probably going to be overturned in like a day or two. And you know, it's just we've you know, they're boring, but I think it's but it's important, I think, for them to go through this process, because at the end of the day, I think what will hopefully happen is, A, we'll see some patent reform, which
is sorely needed. Yeah.
And then the other thing is that once they've gotten this out of the system, everybody will actually be able to sit back down as adults and be like, well, this is a real technology that we've patented, and you know, you should buy a license from us. And then they'll say, yes, we will, because we know after all of this, all after these massive patent wars, exactly what that patent is really worth. You know, I mean, I think that, you know, what people shouldn't get mistake though is like, there's a big difference between like people arguing about like interface and patents and, you know, the kind of things that are going on between Samsung and Apple, where Samsung has essentially like cloned the entire iPhone experience. You know, like that's a very different kind of suit, even though we talk a lot about patents in it. Like that's very much a suit, I think, more about trying to ride somebody else's coattails and, you know, confusion, you know, end user and customer confusion.
Yeah, Samsung, stop copying Apple. Ben Fish asks, and that's FYSH. He's talking about the podcast app, and he says, Airfun, are you not concerned that moving it out of the core OS reduces discoverability? Not that it was great when it was baked into iTunes, he says. So he's saying, you know, moving podcasts out of iTunes, isn't that going to mean that less people use iTunes or use podcasts? Buster, what do you think?
I don't think so. I think people that want to listen to podcasts will listen to it. And also, you know, they'll see... Also, you see that app, you know, podcast is the number one app. You'll have new people trying it out as well, wanting to see what podcasts are. Like we talked about earlier, Apple kind of made it a little bit easier, more accessible for people to understand what a podcast is all about now.
That's a great point. And actually, when it was in iTunes, it was kind of buried, wasn't it? I mean, no one even knew it was there anyway.
Right, you had to go to the more section to find it.
Yeah, right. How many people do that? Yeah. So I think it's going to help it.
I have a question, though, guys. Why do you think that they aren't shipping iOS 6 with this app installed?
With it pre-installed? Well, they don't ship iBooks either, pre-installed either.
Yeah, you're right.
There's a couple of other ones that they don't. Find My Friends, Cards.
Well, Cards, yeah.
I mean, which I'm shocked.
Yeah,
I love Cards.
I'm shocked, yeah.
I love Cards, too.
But I did, too. It's my favorite app.
But yeah, it is kind of interesting that they won't have it pre-installed as well as iBooks. I feel like both of those really should be pre-installed, but I'm glad that they're not, because that means you can delete them.
Yeah,
that's absolutely true. That's a good point. Alex Roos, I'm sorry, Alex, if I'm pronouncing that incorrectly, and that's Russell Extro on Twitter. He says, do you think Apple is going to replace the 30-pin connector with a micro USB one? What will happen with all gadgets that use this? John, I just want to gasp.
Yeah, can I field this?
Sure.
Okay. Micro USB, absolutely not. They will never do that. But they will use a 19-pin connector. The reason I was so excited is because I've been spending all week researching a story about this and learning all about how the dock connector works. What it comes down to is that... The reason they won't use a micro USB connector is, if you look at a micro USB connector, it basically has four pins, and one of them is ground, one of them is data in, one of them is data out, and the other one is power. So, you know, the reason Apple chooses to use a 30-pin dock connector instead of this 4-pin micro USB connector is because... if you have a USB device and you plug it into your computer, right? Like, there's all sorts of drivers that get loaded to run that, all sorts of things. When you have multiple pins, accessory making gets a lot easier, because you can make accessories that have lot lower power requirements and that don't need to have custom drivers written. They can just say, okay, well, data is going to come through pin 3 and pin 5 that do what this accessory needs, and that, you know, and so we don't need to worry about anything else. So we'll just watch data that's coming through those pins, and everything will be fine. Whereas if you've got a 4-pin, everything needs to be translated, because there's only data in and data out. So what Apple's going to do is they're going to take this 30-pin dock connector, and they're going to get rid of all of the pins that have nothing to do anymore with anything that Apple does. So there's like 5 FireWire backwards compatibility pins that can just go out.
Right.
You know, there's something like there's something like actually I think there's 7 FireWire pins, and there's something like 3 or 4 composite video pins that are all about, like, you know, those pins are dedicated to shooting basically sending video from your like ancient iPod Color to a TV connected through a VGA. Nobody needs that anymore, especially with AirPlay. So what they're going to do is they're going to ditch FireWire, they're going to ditch this composite video stuff, make everybody do AirPlay if they want to do video, and they're going to shrink that connector. But it won't be micro USB at all, because Apple's got way too many deals in place with accessory makers who are all super worried about this transition, incidentally. super panicked. Like, there are, like, you know, $200,000 cars out there with iPod docks in it. Like, this is a major thing.
That's true, but, you know, they'll just sell an adapter for $10 and you can dock your iPhone and your Lamborghini again, and as I do. And, you know, they need to shrink down the parts in the iPhones, right? I mean, they're always making things smaller. And this current dock connector has been around for what, like 5 years?
No, 12.
12 years. That's what I meant to say.
Maybe not 12. What, 10, John?
Yeah, well, I don't know exactly how long. I think it's 10. That's a good question. I should look that up.
Well, the Tyrannosaurus Rex was still around when this was invented.
But yeah, those changes,
I mean, they designed it to be future-proof, which is awesome. But, you know, as it turned, like, so that's why, you know, I think that when they released the original dock connector, like, only 2 or 3 of the pins actually did anything, you know, like, but over time it's gotten, you know, they figured it out and they realized that they don't need the vast majority of what they have going on there. And so, yeah, it's all about streamlining.
Onwards. That's what Apple's motto should be. Benny Boy 77. I like this question a lot. He said, do you guys think iOS is getting boring? They need to do some big changes, otherwise Win 8 is looking tempting. Boy, we talked about this a little bit last week with Joe Brown, the Gizmodo editor, and he even said he thought iOS was getting boring. And I don't know what I don't remember if I mentioned any or if I said anything in response to that. I don't think iOS is getting boring at all. I think iOS 6 is one of the most exciting releases of the iOS we've ever seen. I'm terribly excited for iOS. I don't think it's getting stale at all. Yeah, no.
Are you serious?
Screw you guys. Yeah, no. You guys are wrong.
How can you say it's the most exciting? I don't see that at all.
It excites me. And that doesn't mean that it's getting more features than everyone else. But I think...
What is it excites you? What excites you about it?
Well, the way the slider light changes when you...
Oh, yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Right?
Ear bling.
Well, I guess I'm excited most for the prospect of all the features that are going to be added. All the new things it's going to be able to do.
Like what?
And I really like the things that it can do already, so it doesn't bore me at all. I mean, I don't think it needs to change radically. I would love to see them get dynamic icons like Windows 8 has. That would be really cool, but I think the Windows phones are eyesores, personally. I think they're so hideous. I think their UIs... I know people that work for Windows projects doing different UI designs, and they have like this very minimalist approach, but to me it seems almost juvenile, and I don't like how it's just a single block of color with a very ugly font, in my opinion. And I think the home screen of the Windows phones are hideous. Like, you have like pictures, and then you have color blocks, and then you have this really skinny font. I think the iOS home screen looks so much better. I don't know. Just my opinion. So you guys think it's getting boring?
Yeah.
Really?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know. I mean, talking about boring, I mean, that's kind of a boring question in itself, I think. Like, sorry, man, but like, you know, like, I mean, you know, because like, is OS like, yeah, kind of, but I mean, I don't really want to pull my pocket out. I don't want to really pull my iPhone out of my pocket every time and then like immediately ejaculate my central nervous system. Like, you know, I kind of like, you know, it's something that I'm meant to use all the time. Like, you know, I don't live for this operating system just for these once a year announcements. I live for it to like kind of use it every single day. And, you know, there's some stuff that Windows Phone is doing that's really cool and really interesting. And I wish some of that stuff Apple would do. But, you know, I mean, it's, you know, iOS is still the best mobile operating system out there. Like, end of story.
Period. Suck it, Buster. Boring. Your mom's boring. Hey, let's see here. This is going to be a hard one. Kieran Anderson, at Kieran Anderson, is asking, do you think Apple will update the iPod Touch in October? I think we're due to see a whole refresh of all the iPods come October. Right, fellas?
Well, all of them? The iPod Classic?
No, dude, never mind. I take that back. The iPod Classic will never be updated again. That thing is such a dog. They're going to keep it around until flash memory is cheap enough that they could put 128 gig drive in an iPod Touch. You don't think they'll do that?
No, I don't think they'll bother. No.
No, they'll never do that because they got the iCloud, and that's what they're banking on. Yep. They're putting all their money outside of storage. Yeah. Like look at the MacBook Air, 64 gigs, man. Like, you know, I mean, no, it's all in the cloud. That's why Steve Jobs was really serious about it.
At least he was.
But I love my iPod Classic. I got a 160 gig iPod Classic. I still use it every single day.
It's crazy. Those things hold their resale values like you would not believe. I sold a fifth generation iPod Classic. It had a 60 gigabyte hard drive for like $90 on eBay. Talk about for a piece of tech that's that old, that's pretty amazing.
No, they're great. I mean, they're the only serious. I mean, if you're like a musician or somebody who's, you know, I mean, we talk a lot about the iCloud and streaming, but if you're one of these people who has like all of your CDs like as straight CD rips and FLAC and stuff, like 160 gigs, and if you have any serious record collection, like, I mean, I had an iPod. I mean, I've got like 80 gigs of that 160 gig. Kind of filled up, and you know, I know people who have 300, 400 gig music collections.
My music collection's 110.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Of course, now that I'm trying to pare down my music collection, especially because I'm actually going to be doing a little project here. I'm going to be installing an SSD on my MacBook Pro, and I need to pare my data down to 256 gigs, which right now I'm like almost at 500. And most of it, a big chunk of it, is that music collection. And I'm like, I can use Spotify for mostly everything I do, you know? So do we really need to have all this music sitting on our computers anymore? And I think for most people, the answer is no.
And most people didn't have all that much music to begin with. Like, I bet if, I don't know what the actual study is, but I bet if Apple like released like an iTunes survey, they'd say something like the average iTunes library has like 200 songs, you know, something really small. I mean, Spotify and, you know, things like Ardio, they're fantastic. Why do you need, I mean, like, I still have this, this 160 gig iPod classic that has all of my stuff on it, but like my MacBook Air doesn't have any of this music on it anymore. And I don't load any songs up on my iPhone or my iPad. Like, it's all through streaming now.
That's what I do too. Yeah. I do the exact same thing. Well, let's wrap up with this question. Dilara FRMN, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, wants to know, will Leander be on the next show? We hope so. We hope so. He's MIA. He's traveling around Europe with his family, and who knows where he is now, but we're going to try to have him on as often as possible while he's traveling. And then, of course, I think come August, he's going to be back, and he'll be back on the show. We miss him too. But guys, that's it. We're out of time for today. Thanks for being on, John. I love having you on.
Well, I love you, peeps. Thanks for having me on.
This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I want to thank the folks at digitdna.net for sponsoring the show. Check them out, Discade5. And hey, check us out on Twitter. We have great conversations there, too. I'm at Erfon, E-R-F-O-N. Buster is B-S-T-3-R. John, what's yours again?
Dr. Crypt. D-R-C-R-Y-P-T.
I like it. And new episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. We will catch you guys next time. Cool. Dr. Crypt. What exactly does that mean?
So like when I first started, like when I was like 10, I was on Prodigy systems. Do you remember Prodigy?
I do remember Prodigy. Yeah.
All right. And like, I wrote, like, they had like a teenager's fiction section, and I wrote a series of stories about a Dr. John Crypt, who was like a 1940s private detective who fought Nazis and vampires.
Wait,
and
so Dr. Crypt is something that you made up?
Yeah, that was the name of
it. It sounds like a character from like a popular comic that I can't remember.
Yeah, no, it's exactly like that kind of thing. And you know, and I did that, and then of course that became my handle when I was like 12 or 13. And then as the years went by, I just kept on plugging it in, and then my professional career took off, and all of a sudden I, like, the Twitter handle that I had and like the email address and all of these forum handles I had like started to be kind of embarrassing to a 33-year-old man. I've got to change it, but you know, all of the good Twitter handles are gone now. Like, Brownlee is just being squatted on by, like, I think some Florida lighting company or something. So, you know,
I think clownpenis.fart is still available. Did you guys ever see that SNL sketch?
No.
Oh, you didn't? About, it was about this financial firm that didn't think the internet was going to catch on. And by the time they figured out that it was like not, it was here to stay, the only domain left was clownpenis.fart. And they're like this very serious financial institution, and they kept repeating their URL. It was hilarious. Dude, I think Dr. Crypt, I think that you've had it for so long now that it's actually cool again, right?
I should just embrace it. Yeah.
You should, yeah. I mean, it's like, whoa, you created that when you were 10 or 12, like, and you just stuck with it this long? That's pretty cool.
Well, it doesn't. Yeah, it, no, I really should. Like, I really should. But you know, there's a story attached. And like, the thing is, like, I'm never going to change it to anything because, like, in Twitter, where every character counts, I'm never going to find a Twitter username that's less than 7 characters now. Like, there's just no way. So I'm kind of stuck with it.
It's cool, you know, like when you don't have to, like, you know, dress it up with all these weird characters. Like, if you're like John Brownlee 7259 apostrophe, it's like you have a unique name now. It's like Dr. Crypt. There's nothing else about it besides that, and that's kind of cool, I think.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I mean, I think it's also, like, what I should do is I should come up with, like, a story. Like, I'm just like, well, I say that because before I became a professional blogger, I was both got a medical degree and, you know, I learned to embalm dead corpses for a living. So, you know, that's, you know, like, that kind of thing.
I really like that, actually. And as you were saying that, I was like, wait, you got a medical degree? I was like, oh, wait, no, it's just a story.
Man of mystery.
And I bet Dr. Crypt works really well with the ladies, if you know what I mean.
Although you've
got a girlfriend, don't you?
Well, I've got a girlfriend now. Like, and actually, when I was like a pimply 14-year-old who was too into monsters, no, Dr. Crypt did not work very well for me. Like, go figure.
My name's Dr. Crypt. Do you want to come and dance with me?
Hello, ladies. Are you afraid of the dark? It's me, Dr. Crypt.
Ooh, I think that's our new cult cast show. The Romance Hour with Dr. Crypt.
Hello.
You can just talk about people's sex problems.
Or you can talk about mine.
Or talk about your own. We can do a full hour on that each week.